Welcome back to Jamie and Lawrence Discuss All the Football, where we talk all the football.
The football.
Yeah. Let's talk Chelsea. I think Chelsea is an interesting start. Later on in the show, we're going to talk Arsenal, we're going to talk Liverpool, we're going to talk City, we're going to talk Manchester United, Brighton. Is it worth talking Everton? I don't really...
A bit, yeah.
Sure. Let's start with Chelsea, though. Everyone seems obsessed with how badly Chelsea are doing or how well Chelsea are doing. Which end of the spectrum do you fall on? Terrible Chelsea, good Chelsea?
Bad Chelsea.
Really? Why? What's so bad about Chelsea?
Two problems with Chelsea. Okay. One is the obvious. Too much money, too many players, no direction. Mm-hmm. That's the obvious one. The other one that bugs me about them is they've spent £1 billion on not very much that's tangible. Sure. If you look through that squad and go, who's an Arsenal starter, a City starter, a Newcastle starter even, you are kind of debating the midfield positions for £200 million.
Who would Raheem Sterling start for? We might find out soon. I don't know. Okay, should we just go through the team? Because maybe we're missing the point here. I think a lot of people, I maybe have a conspiracy theory about Chelsea that I'll lay out in another video, but I wanted to discuss it with you before we do it. I think there are lots of people who'd start in other teams. So Robert Sanchez, you know,
good
goalkeeper. Maybe the second goal was kind of his fault on the weekend, flappy hands, but Wesley Fofana, people were a little bit upset that he went to Chelsea. I think he'd go to... What's the highest other team that, like, would Liverpool sign Wesley Fofana? I'm not sure.
He's the perfect example of what I mean, though. He's clearly a good player. It was great for that season for Leicester.
Yeah.
But for 50 million, like, there's nothing tangible
there.
It was
a lot of money. Was it not higher than 50?
It may have been 70.
Yeah, it felt like 80. Levi Colwill, Liverpool wanted him at one point. I think that was more just to get a transfer, get a higher contract out of Chelsea, but it worked. Mark Cucurella. I mean, Mark Cucurella would go anywhere in La Liga. And, I mean, he'd probably go, Liverpool would take him. I think City would probably take him. I think City wanted him, didn't they? Yeah. Caicedo, surely... Three or four of the clubs, maybe not for that price, but they wanted him. Lavia, Palmer, Enzo, Nkunku. I've named almost half that starting 11 there. Nicholas Jackson, give or take. I think he's their version of Divock Origi. But Pedro Neto, yes. Kieran and Dewsbury Hall, yes. Vega, give or take. It drops off. Mudrick. Mm. Yeah, like, and then Reece James. And obviously... There's other people in there who, you know, will we ever see Ben Chilwell again? Don't know.
The thing about that squad and the players we've named is they're clearly good individually. Mm-hmm. But for the outlay, they feel like a good Europa League team.
Sure.
And the players that are good in there, we're talking Enzo, we're talking Caicedo, we're talking Fofana.
Yep.
Have been good off the back of one or two seasons, playing excellently, and then one or two seasons of being okay. There's very few players in there who have done it for any length of time, which is, you know, they've bought young, but it feels like a hell of a lot of potential. And they don't feel massively different to Newcastle to me.
Yeah, if you go through the Newcastle starting 11, and especially if they get like a Mark Guay or a Joe Gomez or someone like that, it feels much more solid. But I guess what I'm trying to work out here is what... They won't just be doing this because they want to. There'll be a strategy behind it. I thought there would be a strategy. And we've only really seen them for, 18 months now? Maybe closer to 2 years? I don't think that's really that long to be able to judge owners. You know, FSG hadn't done much when they came in at that point. The City owners, I think, they were getting towards something really good at that point. Newcastle's owners haven't taken them that far in this period. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's an unfair time to judge Chelsea's owners. And really, it's all these like weird outlying things that people seem to pick on, as opposed to, well, you know, is your coach coaching? You know, Enzo, Caicedo, both those guys would start in Liverpool's... I mean, you know, they would. They press for Liverpool's midfield.
Yeah, I think it's too early to judge the results.
Yeah.
The results aren't great when you finish sort of ninth the one year and sneak into the European places the next.
By the way, the note on that is that Enzo Maresca then said, I think in a press conference somewhere, I think it was under a week ago, maybe 3 days ago, I wasn't told when I came in that Champions League was a prerequisite.
Given the spending, that is fascinating. Because But just to say, you can judge the owner's strategy. So we'll talk, we'll get into the strategy. But I think the criticism is coming from, you signed all those players last year. What the hell are you doing signing another X number? And maybe that is, as we're about to get into, something of a reason to the chaos.
Well, I think there is reason to the chaos. And I think from the outside, it appears more chaotic. Obviously, I think received knowledge and actual knowledge are two different things. So they've obviously come in with a very different idea of how football works. And I think you do need a working understanding of how the football industry works, right? I mean, I think so.
Yeah. And, you know, the two things they've done really well is they've got their wage bill. We were talking earlier.
Got their wage bill right down.
Their wage bill, we read, there was in the Telegraph, from 200 grand a week on average under Abramovich, 60 grand a week on average now.
Yeah.
Even Cole Palmer, who's just signed a contract for like $1 billion, is on, I think, 120.
Wait, okay,
which is so low compared to what you'd expect Cole Palmer to be on.
Right. And considering he left City to be more of a first team guy, those kind of things. I guess over the lifetime of his contract, he'll earn more. Maybe there's a bad logic in that. Like, are they kind of banking on players wanting, you know, to have guaranteed money rather than the promise of huge money? Maybe
I think that they're banking
huge money.
They're banking on the fact that a player could play for them for 3, 4, 5 years,
right,
and still have 5 years on their contract,
right,
and have a low wage.
Yeah,
both of which make them sellable. So the case for Chelsea's strategy at the moment is, hey, we got the squad age right down.
Yeah,
they're clearly good. They're on low wages. They're on low contracts.
Yeah.
Just wait and see until we trim the squad. Once the squad is trimmed, we'll be in a good spot. And I think that's never the been, reasoning.
That's never really been what people do in football, though, is it? Like, I guess the other side of that, and like the human side of it, to counter that argument is Chelsea, I think, as fans love the idea, especially after the Abramovich era, of the squad that they know, the local lads and the additional continental cultured players. That's always been Chelsea's idea of Chelsea, right? Like, you know, there are a couple of tasty boys in there who come from the UK, but there's also a couple of guys in there who are hard men who have a beautiful edge. Like, that's surely what most people characterize Chelsea as. And that's not how this squad is made up. Like, Enzo maybe fits that, but has he really delivered on that? You know, there's plenty of other players that you could put in there where it's like Cucurella would have been a player that under Mourinho, you're like, yeah, he's a nasty, nasty player. But under Maresca, because we don't know much about him, because we don't know the identity of the club, and because everyone thinks that these guys are, how can I put it, like, not the guys, they don't bother to even do the research about these, but they don't want to get to know these players all that much.
Yeah, and it's weird, right? Like, the thing about Klopp, I assume it was fun to watch Liverpool under Klopp.
Very.
They had an identity.
Yeah.
What do you think this Chelsea's team identity will be in 6 months?
I'm a little bit worried that a disconnect between what they think the identity should be and where it's going to go. Maresca doesn't really have all that interesting a football, is what most people say in their analysis. I watched some highlights of Leicester last year. Inclined to agree. Like, I don't really think, I wasn't blown away in the way that I'm blown away by Arsenal, shall I put it that way? And if you've spent all that money, you've got all this coach, I would maybe expect there to be more outcome. But maybe we're still early on. Like, so to counter that argument, the squad they put together last year wasn't all that far away from the squad that they have now, right? It's really only the addition of like a Pedro Neto. I think if they get Osimhen, that would jump them about 3 or 4 league positions. But really, Poch got them playing, didn't he?
Yeah, Poch, one, got them playing, and two, built relationships between the players.
Sure.
They were starting to break out. Mm-hmm. Oh, we know how each other...
Cole Palmer.
Right, and now this season, because they've signed, I think, 10 or 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. Not all of them are first team players, but still...
Only a couple of them, if anything.
But it's like, why break... I mean, this is a separate conversation, but why would you break up the thing, to your point?
Sure.
That's beginning to start working, especially when the replacement does play a little bit slow. Mm. It's very like... If you look at the number of passes it takes them to get up the pitch, at least last year with Leicester. And by the way, they won the league, so I'm not criticizing it. But Leicester fans weren't that excited about it.
No, I mean, they're up and... you know, I think they've probably got a couple of holes in the team. Maybe Maresca. I think as a coach like Maresca, you probably realize you have to strike when the iron is hot. He probably anticipated a relegation in the Premier League, or that he couldn't play the same style of football coming up as You know, Burnley came up. I don't think they play a similar style to Maresca, but it felt a bit more like Parsi in the Championship, and it, you know, outpassed the Championship, but it wasn't exactly like Premier League level.
That's such a good point. I mean, Maresca, like, probably without Leicester team in the Premier League, you just slightly worry and go, would you just be Burnley Mark II? Because the risks you have to take at the back aren't justified by your ability to turn it into domination.
And I get that. You know, I also think the other side is, I think timelines and stories don't fit every aspect of the club. So sure, I think there could be an element of this ownership being incompetent in some ways, or incompetent is probably the wrong word. Like, how can I put it? There are holes in their knowledge base in terms of football, or blind spots. All those three words, you know exactly what I'm saying. It doesn't mean that everything is their fault. It doesn't mean that all the issues that Chelsea has are caused by Chelsea's ownership. Some of them, like I said last season, and I think people they're very quick to forget when telling the story of Chelsea. Abramovich has kind of become this like martyr type figure now for Chelsea fans, where it's sort of like, oh, do you remember the good old days before this guy got taken away unfairly in the night? And it's like, well, yeah, but do you not remember where the money came from? Do you not remember X, Y, Z? Do you really know how the club was run? Do you really want to have that reputation attached to your... Like, if you think your club is so great, which I think Chelsea is probably a great institution in London, do you really want it to be marred by someone else's terrible story?
Yeah, and to that point, like, you know, the high wages they're struggling with now, Lukaku, Raheem Sterling, Ben Chilwell, were not this regime. They were the old one.
Right, and to add to that as well... Not only were they the old regime, but they were a signal that the old regime, whilst it did have some hits, and obviously their transfer policy, I think, was, I wouldn't call it 100% hits, but like, you know, it was a relatively good return. Though I would definitely say, again, let's not frame this in rose-tinted spectacles. I think there were a lot of people who are also a little bit disenchanted at certain points in the Abramovich era as well, where it was like, oh, is our transfer committee really going the right way? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and to be fair, Chelsea, like, the 2 years they won the Champions League, they weren't very good. It wasn't like they had like...
Were they not? I think
They finished outside the Champions League places under Di Matteo, and were like, just, it was in one of the most amazing campaigns ever
under
as a
Tuchel,
fan.
Right.
And under Tuchel, they were like... I mean, I think they finished in the Champions League places just.
It's a good squad. That was a good squad, though, I think. I think a lot of people felt that was more of a Champions League squad. I remember talking to like Andy Brassel at the start of that season, and his prediction was they'd go deep in the Champions League. I don't know if he said they'd win. It might have been like a rogue shout. But like, I think he said they'll go deep because it felt like, oh, you're building to win a European Cup rather than a league, or you can win the European Cup very often before you win the league because of the pieces you've got, and the final few pieces make you league winners.
Yeah, and but to that point, like, so even without trying to not be too rose-tinted about the Abramovich era, they won a ton of trophies, but they were never or very rarely consistent. They sort of had gap years.
Yeah.
They sort of won the league, then finished 10th, then won the league again.
And I also felt like there was never a consistent footballing ideology, and I think there were some... There were definitely some misnomers in there in terms of what they wanted to do or how they wanted to achieve it. Like, you know, Mourinho, I remember when Abramovich first came in, it was like, oh, I want to buy Ronaldinho, I want to buy Robinho. There are all these big rumors about a flair, a player very much of that time, like, but like a flair, beautiful, we're going to play this really attractive style of football. I don't think Chelsea were unattractive at times, but they certainly weren't the most attractive team in the league under Mourinho. Like maybe they were compelling, but don't tell me that was attractive football, because it wasn't. Really, the first time they played that sort of really attractive football, maybe Ancelotti?
Yeah, but they never really... I mean, but Chelsea didn't mind that. Like Real Madrid, Chelsea...
Sure.
These are sort of trophy-winning institutions without a style of play.
But Real Madrid, for like, that's their whole identity. That's their whole thing, is like, we win things. Mm. I mean, I guess Chelsea co-opted that, but they never, that's not their actual identity, is it? Like, their real identity is London, pride of London, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I remember reading about Chelsea in like the 60s, 70s, when they were very stylish. Like, if you wanted, like, the King's Road was the style. Yeah.
It's a expensive part of town.
The only other criticism I'd make of the new ownership, which we haven't covered, is they got rid of Petr Cech and Marina, her last name escapes me.
Yeah, Marina, but she was, say Hyde, but that's actually a Guardian columnist. Yeah. Kitspire.
She had a very Eastern European last name.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's kind of like a David Gill, Alex Ferguson, that's too strong thing going on, where a couple of people really knew what was going on.
Sure.
And then the new ownership kind of binned them off in the, that like venture capital spirit.
Sure.
Changed the logo, fire half the staff.
Yeah. I mean, it works.
And that's what it hasn't quite yet.
Is it, so venture capitalists, what is their end goal? Just to make as much money as possible?
Yeah, so they just raise the value of the business.
Right.
And then they sell it.
That doesn't win you games. That won't win you football matches.
No, and this is the kind of, I mean, they're claiming when they bought the club, they were like, we know we're venture capitalists, but we're here for the long run.
Right.
But the way they're currently doing things does slightly feel like, what if we created loads of low-wage, talented players with high upside and then sell them later?
But that does feel like what they're doing,
correct,
isn't it? It's kind of, they've kind of made like a side business out of the academy or whatever it is. It's not really even the academy. They're buying them and then they, I guess they're developing them. But you, I guess the blind side is maybe the development element. Like,
if you're not playing games, so the Chelsea model now may well have been compelling if 5 years ago they could have had their army of 40 loanees out.
Right.
But now Raheem Sterling, not that he'd be one of them, but he wasn't even in the squad. Nor was Chukwuemeka, nor was Chalobah.
Yeah.
So you're buying these players and saying, oh, they're going to have brilliant upside, but they're not stocks. They have to play. They have to build relationships.
Yeah. There has to be an element of them attracting interest in the market, surely. And I get it, like, you know, maybe Liverpool did that with Fabio Carvalho, or I don't know if they deliberately did that with Fabio Carvalho, but like, you know, City did it with Liam Delap. I don't know if Liam Delap's upside was, I don't know, I think his upside was very high. He seems like a very good Premier League player. But what I mean is, I don't know if they sold him for like gross profit and everyone was like, whoa, 80 million to Ipswich, you know what I mean?
I mean, it's a great strategy and it's, helps offset the risk of buying young players.
What you mean by spreading the risk out?
Yeah,
so if you sell 3 for 50, you can afford to get rid of 3 for 20.
Exactly. But it's not a brilliant strategy if that's going to build your first team squad. It feels like what Chelsea have ignored in that pursuit is a centre forward. What they've ignored in that pursuit is...
Consistently, by the way.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
What they've ignored in that pursuit is a really obvious standout centre half. They've like,
yeah, Thiago Silva, you could argue, is maybe that for a little while, but I get your point.
He's not
Kompany, he's not Van Dijk, he's very, very good, but he's not. He was in the twilight of his career, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was really good for, I mean, he was really good full stop. But what you would say about Chelsea's strategy is it may well make a heap of sense financially over a 10-year time horizon. It doesn't make a huge amount of sense to win football games, build relationships on the pitch, have a happy fan base who feel connected with the club, have a happy 11 who build... It just doesn't feel like it's even aiming at that.
And to add to that, does it not... Like, I'm not saying that, you know, we're playing at such big levels of money here that it's like generational wealth. I know there's a lot of millionaires who go, oh, 5 million is not that much. To most normal people, 5 million is a lot of money. It makes your family for at least one generation, buy your mama a home, buy your, you know, whatever. Like, you can do that with 5 million pounds after tax. I guess the interesting aspect there is you're guaranteed that, but what about... Okay, so I'll give you an analogy. When they raise the student fees from £3,000 to £9,000 a year. I remember I was at university. I was the last generation that had £3,000 rather than the £9,000. But we all went out and protested the £9,000. Not because, and you know, obviously everyone was like, oh, you know, they're only paying it back as a loan or whatever. It's like, okay, fair enough. But that's not the point. You're putting people off going to university and, you know, The core point that I made then was you're not trying to just make a workforce who just have some skills. You don't just send someone to university and it's like The Sims. They just level up and then they've got the skills you need. It's about the holistic other aspect of that, which football kind of relies on and Chelsea is sort of built around. Like, if Mourinho didn't have all the other magic stuff that went with him, then we wouldn't be hooting and hollering about him so much. Like, he brings everything else to the club and everyone goes, oh, I'm invested in that. The players don't go, I'm really invested in what you've laid out for me at right back. Like, that's not the way Mourinho or so many, I can't name another big coach who doesn't seem to have an overarching plan that players are invested in. The top four of the Premier League last season proves that. And the, you know, City, yes. Arsenal, yes. Liverpool, yes. Villa, absolutely. There's something going on there with the overall collective. And I think beyond that, like, you can see the players involved. And I really like Unai Emery's style. Even Newcastle, you could argue Eddie Howe has that. Spurs, Ange Postecoglou is absolutely a proponent of fringe benefits, or what, it's not even a fringe benefit, core benefits of being a football player. You play football, you're adored by the people, you're doing it for the fans, you're committed to something in your life, all these things. It seems a lot like that isn't very emphasized in this new Chelsea model, which is sort of like stack them high, get them out the door.
And as a player, it must be very hard to buy into. I am one of 43 young players with upside potential, and we may as a collective be sold on to make a pro. That's not something you can buy into.
Well, yeah, I get that. But then would you not say that's the same with like American football? American football is a 53-man squad. You know, baseball's 30-man or whatever. And NBA is obviously a much smaller squad, but that's because they got five starters. But NHL?
But you'd have to look at the relative number of you relative to appearances. Like 40, sure. There's a 25-man limit to a Premier League squad,
yeah,
excluding under-21s. So if you are in a club where you don't feel like you've got relationships with other players,
right, sure,
you don't have a realistic chance of developing.
Okay.
You know, most young players need 5 or 10 games in a row,
yeah,
right, to feel settled. I mean, the chances of someone getting 5 or 10 games in a row in this Chelsea side, unless your name is Enzo Fernandez and maybe one or two others, is essentially nil.
And it's interesting how they've, I mean, Reece James clearly seems a bit of a liability for them injury-wise. Chilwell clearly seems like he can't play consistently. It seems like the old guard that kind of, there felt like there was so much hope around, the other aspects of the club don't seem quite well built enough in order to sustain them. So like Reece James consistently injured. It maybe this kind of, this aspect of let's focus on this part of the club. I don't know, maybe they need to get that bit right and then everything else follows. Like, what's the plan there? Is it just that we're really focusing on this end of the club and actually the whole load of other stuff that will follow that? Like all these dominoes will fall after they nail the youth.
Yeah, like people used to joke about England and the Euros being vibes FC.
Yeah.
But Chelsea needs a little bit of that.
Sure.
Like they need their Reece Jameses and I mean, right. Gallagher. Seems like he's either on the way out or not. But
yeah,
for sure. I think that's a symptom of what you're describing.
What's the peak and the lowest that Chelsea achieved this year? Peak, I think, is fourth. Maybe, I don't think they get third. I think there's a better, more cohesive side than Chelsea. And you go City, Arsenal, tier one, Liverpool.
Villa.
United at a push.
United at a push. Spurs at a push.
I don't think Spurs are in that tier. I think, and then the next tier is like United,
Newcastle.
Newcastle, Spurs.
Chelsea. I think Chelsea could nick fourth, but I think it's on the very upper end.
That's the peak. And the lowest very, the is very peak. 10th, right? 10th.
Yeah, 10th, I'd say. Because you can imagine Chelsea having a worse year, getting less points than Newcastle, Brighton, Villa, West Ham, I think finished above them last year, almost did.
But I think when the players get the system, then they'll be all right. It's just that, again, I think they played a very kind of observant coach in Pep, obviously. And so the opening game might feel a little bit misleading.
How would you feel if Liverpool had been run this way?
Horrible. Often? I wouldn't want my club run that way, because I think it also goes against, and I think this is where a lot of people seem to miss this. It's like, you know, it's all well and good saying, oh, well, you know, Chelsea fans, they've got to show some faith in the overall hierarchy. Like, these guys own the club. And I get that. You should get behind your owners if you want to win. Like, as supporters, you kind of have to, in the short term, be like, we're going to try and invest in this. But it's not like, it's not their core identity, is it? They're sort of having everything change. It's like, if you say tomorrow, I really love my local pizza place, and then the guy who makes the pizzas, the delivery boy, and the guy who delivers the ingredients from a farm suddenly moved back to Italy, and you get someone, you know, some local lad, Jimmy, who's suddenly making the pizzas, the ingredients coming from Aldi, not that Aldi is a particularly bad place to go, and the delivery boy is suddenly a drone, that's not the same pizza place, even if it's got the same title across the, like, what is it called? Not title, a business name.
Don't tell me to buy into something that I don't like.
I'm not. Yeah. It's very like, aggressive, Jamie.
It's like, don't tell me, if I'm Chelsea, don't tell me to buy into something that I don't like the look of. Like,
right.
Like, keep faith. Okay, if I like the direction in theory, and I'm not sure on the execution, I can keep faith.
Do you think there's an element of it where obviously, it, you know, business is very much like they all, I imagine some of those people have the Art of War on their shelves. You know, that one or two of them are going to have Donald Trump, and more than one or two are going to have Donald Trump's book in the shelves. You know, there's going to be a couple of people who have affirmation diaries, these kind of things. Like, I don't think any of those things. I think Donald Trump's book is probably fascinating to read for, you know, like a first year at preschool. But I think all of that says to me, don't tell anyone what our model is. Liverpool will try to take it. City will. You don't want anyone else to know what your business model is, because then other people will try to disrupt your business model. Just the same as, I don't think Liverpool wanted Caicedo last year. I think they were just messing with Chelsea. I don't think Liverpool, I mean, maybe they loved Caicedo, but I don't think they loved him 115 million.
Very unlike Liverpool.
Exactly. I think they were just effing with them.
But, you know, the whole thing of like, don't show anyone your business model. People behave that way, but it's nonsense. Like,
Everyone knows anyway.
Yeah, the idea isn't the difficult thing. It's the execution that's the hard thing.
So, yeah, because like, I think this is what most people miss, is people think that, and maybe not most people, but like, I think maybe we don't have a clear picture of what happens during a transfer and who meets and exchanges information and then how that information gets to us. We assume, I don't know, actually, I don't know what I assume, but like, you know, there is a general assumption that if it comes from Sky Sports or something, then it's legit information. There's a couple of ITKs. That's leaked generally to people. They, you know, David Ornstein's not at lunch with an agent in Chelsea going, let me write this down. Like, that's not the way it works.
Yeah, and also like Brighton's model is like public.
Sure.
In fact, Chelsea have brought in half the backroom staff from Brighton to try and do it.
Yeah.
United's model is public. The models are all public, which is why Chelsea's ownership really should say to the fans, hey, rough couple of years, guys. I know it looks.
Players aren't going to invest in that. There's no way that it looks good. You can't, I guess that's the other aspect of it. No player is going to go, rough couple of years, sign me up. Like, they want to strike now. You have to be seen as, no brand is looking. As soon as Chelsea say publicly, we want to do this. Nike don't go, what, win in 3 years? Great, we'll sponsor the kit for the next 3 years. They go, cool, Castore or add someone else have you. It's not the way it works. You, in football, you have to always be seen to competing. And obviously trust the process, but that's always with the idea of competing. You can't do this.
But you can say, hey guys, this is a 5-year plan. I mean, Arteta's came in and said this is a 5-year plan.
Sure, but I understand where you're going with that. I still think that the spin on it would be so terrible that people wouldn't, like, they've managed to find a way to make it unsponsorable. Chelsea are already struggling to get sponsored on the front of their shirt.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And it's silly in one way because everyone knows that they're not ready to compete with City now. It's like, what are we pretending about?
It's like the Emperor's New Clothes sort of thing.
Completely. Like, why do we have to all mutually pretend every team is ready to win today when, like, actually, 5 years would be a pretty good return.
And on a weekly basis, obviously, it doesn't make for clicks at all or radio fodder or whatever you want to call it to go, it's a 5-year plan. Because the first year in dead air, there's nothing that you can say. You just go, cool, well, they're laying the foundations now. Yeah. It's like walking in when someone's laying the foundations on a house. You want to look at the foundations, but you don't go, well, maybe you do. Maybe you go, well, the living room's not big enough. Like, people start to kind of, that's a bad analogy because actually in a house, you probably will walk in and go, can we make that a little bit bigger? But you can't see, there are no foundations to look at. I mean, there are, but there aren't, if that makes sense. You can't look at the squad and see it in 5 years' time if you're a Chelsea fan, because then that gives away the plan.
Yeah, there is something, everyone loves a project.
Yeah.
But no one likes years 1 to 3 of a project.
No, yeah. I mean, the people who are obviously going to benefit from the upside love the first years 1 to 3. And if you can get that team mentality of like building years 1 to 3, then fantastic. But if you constantly have people, which maybe in most businesses and industries you do anyway, saying that's not going to work, that's not going to work. But like, you remember the same in, I mean, Moneyball's a great example. Moneyball the book, Moneyball the movie, the art, narrative arc is the same. On the come up, everyone told them, is this really going to work? Do you really want to do this? Did they have much choice? Possibly not. Maybe PSR is like removing the element of choice from Chelsea, although it doesn't seem like it's removing their transfer choices. And then maybe also they reached a point where obviously when they go on the winning streak and stuff, they didn't actually win anything on the other side of that initial first one through the wall. I imagine there's a lot of Chelsea meetings where they go, well, the first one through the wall We're the first ones through the wall. We're the ones going to get bloody and beaten. And then he goes home as a billionaire. I don't even think he's doing all that much to Bolly anymore. I think it's Clear Lake. But, you know, they all go first ones through the wall. We're the first. Of course, we're the first ones through the wall. Like, that's the way that works.
Yeah, you're saying that they're going, like, everyone is going to be run this way.
Right.
PSR, by the way, may help Chelsea's model because they may just view all the young players with long contracts as levers to pull.
Right.
Like, they can just liquidate their assets quickly.
Right.
Because they're
because you can pull them relatively quick. Is it not also, yeah, and the players, obviously, if they then wanted to go, like, you don't really have the problem that Manchester United have at this point that Chelsea are kind of going through the pain of at the moment of a player on 300 grand a week that if he goes to somewhere else, they go, you're worth 80. Like, you can just go, you're going to go from here on 60 to here on 70. And the players go, fantastic. I get a wage increase and I live in Sociedad.
Yeah, it makes it so much easier to sell players. Like,
right.
Sterling, they're going to struggle to shift.
Yeah, the Sterling thing doesn't make much sense. I think it probably expresses like an internal lack of communication and how the players are maybe seen as assets. But I also wonder if Sterling's people and Sterling himself are kind of a bit annoyed at this point, a bit sort of perturbed, where it's like, well, I thought we'd be in the squad, though preseason, did it really show how vitally was this one? Not really. Like, he just seems a bit more annoyed than anything else.
Yeah, Maresca,
put this out. Oh.
Maresca just might not fancy him. I mean, it's totally possible.
Like, I don't.
If you look at those wingers, they're quite samey. Like, I think a reasonable
Pedro Neto is an outlier. So they bought Neto to sort of very specifically do a very specific role, right? And Mudryk, I mean, what?
Yeah, I mean, but there's a few of them like that. I really like Makueke.
You really like Makueke? Why?
He's like very productive. Like, if you look at his minutes on the pitch, like, thing, he makes things happen.
Okay.
But to be
fair,
he's
not beautiful to watch, but like, he doesn't get me on the edge of my seat, but he is a good, so you're saying there's good output.
Yeah, but he's one of a few, like, who are good, but I can't really tell them apart.
Sure.
If you're asking me to compare Mudryk and Makueke, it's like, I understand my point being why you could fancy one and not fancy the other. Like, reasonable managers could disagree.
Attractive men, I suppose.
They are both attractive men.
Sure, that makes perfect sense.
Different types, I'd say. Mudryk's got the whole like neck tattoo thing happening.
So let's move on from Chelsea. Do you have any final words for them? Words of encouragement for those guys?
Well, assuming they're all listening in, I'd say...
Which they are.
I'd say I'm interested to see how you get on. I don't know how encouraging that was.
Right. That's not encouraging at all to say the words, I'm interested to see how you get on. Let's talk... where do we even go to next? It's interesting. I thought I'd just cover this very quickly. Really enjoying watching people evaluate Liverpool with having only watched the Ipswich game. So obviously I watched all the preseason, every minute, every second, every hour. Watched all the training, watched all the press conferences, read all the articles. Was then fascinated last week to go to a shoot and have a man who hadn't watched any of the preseason, hadn't watched any of the press conferences. I think he probably watched in preseason. He was a United fan. He watches once against Manchester United when they lost. So how he came to this conclusion, I'll never know. But he went, this is like when Sir Alex left. And I was like, how? And he went, a big figure leaves. And I was like, right, okay. Any other equivalencies there? And he was like, well, he did a lot. And I was like, good point. Is your idea here that Slot will do less or Slot will, I don't know. I think from the outside, it was very easy to write this degradation or deterioration of Liverpool because there's no transfers. Slot, you know, all we really know in the press is he plays intense football and it's a bit more possession based. That's all I ever hear. And it's really nice. I mean, obviously, give us a couple of weeks. They play Manchester United, and not next weekend, but the weekend after, before the international break. So that'll be fascinating. Like, that's probably the best and the worst time to play them. You know, if they play well, it's before the end of the transfer. Oh, no, is it? It's just after the end of the transfer window. So that'd be even more fascinating. It might even be on the first. It won't be. It'll be well after the end of the transfer window. But my point is, that'll be Liverpool's squad set in stone. We've got 10 days for everyone to go, they're either amazing or they're terrible. And at that point, I think people's analysis of Liverpool will be set.
Yeah, it's like both narratives are written.
Yeah.
It's like they're ready to go. It's like...
gone by Christmas. Or, I told you we wouldn't be gone by Christmas. I played you that clip from TalkSport earlier.
Yeah.
Adrian Charles sitting there like smelling his own farts, starts the clip and goes, here's my hot take. Slot's gone by Christmas. Danny Murphy then says, oh, that's fascinating. I think Liverpool win the Champions League. And then Adrian Durham turns to him and goes, good take. I was like, what? But maybe they're just playing like a very throwaway, frivolous game, and that's fine. That's also insane that within the same two sentences, you can go, Slot will be gone, Slot will win the Champions League. That's like, let's evaluate your mental status here. Like,
the only club that take would be consistent with is Chelsea. Chelsea, I can always believe, can sack a manager mid-season and win the Champions League.
Sure. But because that's what they've done.
That's what they've done.
And the same goes for Liverpool. It's like, we can have a bad season in the Premier League, but win the Champions League because we've done it before. So you can imagine a team in red doing that.
With Liverpool, my thing is, they look probably slightly ahead of where they should be for now. Like,
I worry that they've not had the basic system. So I say this in another video on my Liverpool FC channel, that they've not had the basics challenged quite. So there's not really been anyone who's gone, oh, that's your system, is it? We'll see about that. Like, I've not seen that happen in a game yet where there's like, the passing lanes are a bit cut off. Where do we go now? Do you know what I mean?
And that will come. But I think nonetheless, like, you know, if you look at them compared to Chelsea, who also have a new manager with a different style.
Sure.
Chelsea look like they're really learning the basics. Whereas Liverpool feel relatively smooth.
Why do you think that happens at very high-end football? Like, how can a player's mind go so much? Like, what are you so concentrated on tactics?
It's such a good question. My guess is when you have a ball at your feet in the Premier League, what you do with it is fairly rarely spontaneous.
Until you get to like finishing.
Final thirds.
Even finishing isn't really meant to be that spontaneous, but really it's just great if you can be spontaneous.
Yeah, so like my guess would be like, okay, every time I got the ball from here, I was expecting that run to be made and that run to be made.
And then all of a sudden, sometimes they go, sorry, and the other player goes,
right, yeah, yeah. Or the one where the ball just goes out of play and like no one's running for it. Right. And I think it's just like a miscommunication on the pattern of play.
Right.
NFL style kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. You're running a play, basically.
You're running a play. So I think that's maybe why it's hard. Because you're asking people to A, do things they're not used to.
Mm.
Defenders taking the ball under pressure, etc. But I think it's also that. It's like for the last 7 years under Klopp, 9 years, every time Van Dijk got the ball, Henderson would drop in kind of
and
thing.
And then there's that ball there. Mane's there. You know.
Yeah, and I think when you flip that on its head, I think Salah said it was quite different. He said that, you know, it's a totally different thing we're learning to do now.
Right, and he's right. And I guess that's where you see the value in a player, which is why I'm kind of like, that takes me back to the Chelsea thing where it's like, what's the inherent value? Are you just saying these players are all technically good? Like, why are the players valued as such at Chelsea? Like, what is it in their transfer model that says that this guy is worth this much? What? Because Poch to Maresca is quite a jump. Who's the manager before that? Before Poch, it was Potter. And then before that, it was Tuchel. That's four, like, obviously high-end possession-based managers. That's quite a jump in terms of the difference in stars. Poch is going to sign totally different players to Maresca.
Victor Moses was more valuable under Conte than he was under Mourinho.
Right.
They're not. And you're right. Like,
how valuable was he under Brendan Rodgers? Everyone forgets that.
So
right wing back for Liverpool, I think.
So that's the thing. Like, so you're right. Like, when you're evaluating a player's value,
mm-hmm.
you have to evaluate their value given a set of circumstances that isn't unchanging.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that's like, in 8 years, football will be so different to where it is now. Like, by the time a player's end, 8 years ago, Klopp was beginning what Liverpool were doing. And like most of the signings that we were making, well, maybe some of them still lasting, but like they've all evolved in that time. Maybe they've all remained good technical players, but isn't that surely because they've been coached to that level? Like, you're coaching, you have to maintain that. You don't just stay a good player. Obviously, I'm always a good five-a-side player, but you don't just stay a good player without playing.
Well, look at Wan-Bissaka. He went for 50 million quid, then wasn't coached essentially for X number of years. They've now sold him for 15 or 25.
That's higher than I thought. I thought like he'd leave on a free.
There you go. So you're right. Like players, like, and this is back to the Chelsea thing of like, okay, you sign these players thinking their value will go up. Will it? Because it's assuming some coaching and some playing and being in the shop window.
What we're saying here is, I don't want to go back fully on the Chelsea thing, but I guess, yeah, like we said it mid-conversation, you are hoping that you break even and then make profit on the other side. So there'll be a player that goes, like you've got a Coutinho in there somewhere. And it also means that the market has to be good, which I think that's a bit of a issue for them. The market's not amazing.
That's a bit of an existential risk. Yeah, imagine
there aren't many other Chelseas out there. Right, they're sort of going, there'll be another mug. There'll be another moron that's doing what we're doing.
Yeah, you're right. Like if you're going to use your transfers primarily as we're going to get sell on value.
Yeah.
You're making sort of this existential judgment on the state of the transfer market in 5 years.
Yeah.
How do you know?
Well, and that's kind of the point is maybe are they hoarding these players thinking that Saudi are going to have a breakout week and that maybe they buy, they're like, well, we've actually got a full squad ready to go. Like, well, imagine, do you want to buy them all?
Imagine without Saudi, because they sold Mendy.
Sure.
I mean, they sold a Koulibaly handful. Koulibaly, Mendy, there's a
Kante?
Few. Kante.
Was Kante not one more jump away from Chelsea? Maybe he was not at Chelsea when he.
No, he was. He was. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Basically, what they really need to do is buy some fairly dedicated players of the mind of Islam and hope that Saudi come in and go, we're looking for people who fit in culturally and can be a face of the project. Really, they want to buy Mo Salah back and go, got a poster boy for you. Obviously, it sounds like a joke, but what I mean is like all those players were more easily tempted into that because it was like not such a crazy culture shift for them going somewhere that obviously made them feel very comfortable with what their beliefs and outlook on life is, which I think is again speaks to the Chelsea culture. Like, what are your beliefs and outlook? If I don't know, you know, what is your belief and outlook if you go to Chelsea? I know under Klopp, Liverpool wanted, you know, religious homely guys.
Speaking of Salah, he scored and got an assist on the weekend. Yeah,
I think it's like there's the temptation to put the word cheat code somewhere in a title on YouTube this week.
Does that today dispel the idea for you that he shouldn't? Like, do you think he should get a new contract? And if so, under what circumstances?
So I still wonder if I think his quality is still very, 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 very high. I think if Liverpool were to identify someone else in the market and they were to go, we're sold on this guy, everyone would obviously let go and say, well, Salah can move on. But the whole premise of Salah leaving was that we get big money for him. If you're not going to get big money for him, then let him retire at the club. Let him, or if he wants to, do that. Like, I guess that's the point with Salah. That it works both ways. You can't, I would offer him another 2-year contract or whatever, on relatively high wages because his output is so good. And if the output continues, then great.
It's also a weird era where we're not sure when players' outputs drop because it's getting later and later.
Like, right, so like, Salah really would have probably been looked at. We'd have sold by now in a previous era.
Yeah, maybe, right?
Exhausted.
Yeah, whereas if you look at, I mean, Lewandowski's maybe a good example of this. James Milner playing a slightly different position gets a lot of running is a good example. Ronaldo, Messi... so maybe we need to reevaluate what 32 Thiago means. Silva. Thiago Silva is a brilliant example.
I get your point. That's we've named 5 players out of quite a few aging players though. Like those guys are the very high end of the very high end, aren't they? Not everyone's lasting that long. There are also other players who are maybe not able to have access to the same medicines that these people are who are retiring at 31 or something. Like who was it who retired the other day? Phil Jones. Phil Jones just retired. I mean, I'm not saying Phil Jones is of that level, but at one point.
It also goes both ways with Salah, because on the one hand, he looks after him. So you can see he's like brilliantly fit.
Looks in incredible shape.
But the other side is he's a quick winger. And the first thing that tends to go is your pace.
Right.
And he's not.
I do think his passing range is also good. I think his interplay with other players is good. I don't think they overly rely on him being like before I think it was a bit more like, oh, you have to be really quick. Now his anticipation of the play seems better, which obviously always happens with intelligent, fast guys. Like, I feel like you could, obviously both the goals on the weekend came from Salah essentially beating the offside trap rather than being overly quick. First one, you see the left back with his arm up. So he's not going to outpace him there because he's standing there completely static, which you know, I wouldn't be thrilled about as an Ipswich fan, but fair enough. And the second one, he's playing off the back of, again, the left back. So, you know, it's not a great game.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, if you're saying, look, there's no reason to think Salah couldn't readapt his game a little.
He has, hasn't he? Hasn't he already done that?
Yeah, no, he already, yeah. And he already has. Then maybe it's a no-brainer to keep hold of him, unless A, there's some huge, like 100 million plus. And B, there's someone to replace him. Like, well, that's the hard bit, right?
That's always the question that I ask, and obviously a lot of people talk about is high-end output. The question I always ask the people who do the analysis or the numbers is like, how hard is it to find him again in the transfer market? I guess a lot of people's idea is it's not worth rolling the dice. Like, it's better to keep, better the devil you know, almost. I'm not saying he's the devil, but you get my point.
Especially because, like, you can play by talented players with good output. It doesn't mean they're going to do what he's doing.
And also mentality, leadership.
He's like fit every things. Week.
Yeah, that very rarely out the team. That kind of stuff is really important. And clearly motivated, like someone who clearly takes pride in his work. There are other players out there who you'd say have had bust ups with Co. Like at one point I was like, oh my God, what if we sold Salah and Sane, who's in the last year of his contract at Bayern, came to Liverpool? Like what a fun concept to explore. In Football Manager, that works because you can just force him to stay.
He's younger.
He's younger and you just go, you're staying at the club. In real life, doesn't really...
No, exactly. That's so true. And that's why, like, the more we talk about it, it would have to be some seriously good money.
But then again, that goes down to the evaluation of players. Salah's value for Liverpool has probably massively outstripped the money they've put into him commercially, but also in other ways. Like, that... It doesn't mean that's the only way of doing it, to take it back to Chelsea. They see the other end of the spectrum. And obviously, to an extent, I think Liverpool also see that because they've always tried to find the value hidden in the market. And the value hidden in the market got them the value. Salah was hidden value in the market. And he was seen as like an expendable mid-level asset. Chelsea are kind of buying, like that's again where it doesn't work. They're buying high-end assets to become high-end sales. Isn't quite scan, I guess. There's like a... If Salah was around now, I think they'd buy Salah, but from themselves 15 years ago, whatever it was when they sold him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like if you're going to buy... There was a switch that happened at some point in the last 10 years where young players went from cheap because they were young to expensive because they were young.
Yeah, and that you were basically buying very, as Leonardo DiCaprio says, high upside potential. Do you know what I mean?
As he says often.
They're buying pennies on the stock or whatever it is.
Pennies on the dollar.
Pennies on the dollar. And, you know, everyone else in the office goes, oh my God, yeah. I feel like there's... Chelsea are looking for their Jordan Belfort to help them sell whatever it is. Like they're signing players and then calling Barcelona and just playing the Leonardo DiCaprio clip down the phone. But then every time it comes up, they're just going... I've found a company with great upside in the south of England and they're really doing great things in the football market. Like that's how that works for them. And Barcelona on the other end going, it's that automated call thing again. I don't know what's going on.
Who the hell is calling?
Yeah, exactly. And they just keep calling and replacing the name of the player down the phone. We're thinking Wesley Fofana could be doing a good job for you next season. Like, that's the way that works.
Aerotime Dynamics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like Aeronautics or whatever it is. Yeah. And they are basically just, and that's the problem is midway through when they find a player with a very short name, it doesn't work. So it goes, we've found a player with great high upside called Aerotime. Okay, say it now. Raheem Sterling, Dynamics. Oh, right, okay. Who is this player, Dynamics? I've never heard of him before. We must look him up on SofaScore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like that's why they had to get rid of Hall at Newcastle.
Right. Yeah.
Two syllables, come
but
on.
But also, they've got a long name there that definitely covers Dynamics in Kin and Dewsbury Hall. So you're never going to hear the word Dynamics. Yeah.
That's the resale.
That's the resale value that they're getting there.
It was weird they went for Alexander Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. We've got... Make it Alexander. Alexander Oxlade-Chamberlain. Look him up. He'd be amazing for you. They're Americans, so it all works. Any other people really impressed you over the weekend? I like Brighton. I think Matoma's back. I think they've spent 180 million in the transfer market, which actually, I think it puts them as like one of the top spenders in the summer.
Brighton, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Went out and spent that Caicedo money.
Whoa.
Maybe the check finally cleared from Chelsea a year later.
Having bounced a couple of times.
Literally, when they're in the meeting with them, they went... Check didn't clear, so...
I thought Villa.
I liked Onana's header. Onana's header was very...
satisfying.
Decisive, wasn't it?
Like, bang.
That felt very Van Dijk in his first game for Liverpool. It was like, he's up, boom! And he just found himself in space. West Ham were just sort of like, oh, we left the tallest guy on the field. Like, and massive and motivated.
Why was it on... It should have been Soucek, I thought, on him.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, wasn't it?
It was Antonio. Anyway, but they were great. And also, like, West Ham have a lot of good players now. Mm-hmm. And they looked a level above West Ham, which you'd expect because it was the manager's first game versus 2 years into a project.
Yeah, and it wasn't like there was all that. Like, you know, the score wasn't like 9-1 or something. It was
no, and Soucek could have scored right to the end.
Yeah, exactly.
But they looked a level. I mean, they were just confident. They looked like a...
coaching and confident. Yeah.
They looked like a top four team, really.
Do you think?
Yeah.
What's your top four? I've not done a predictions video this season.
I don't know about the top two, but it's Arsenal and City in some order.
You have to know about the top two. Yeah.
Okay. It's Manchester City. Boo. Ooh,
that's boring.
Sorry. Arsenal.
Oh.
Liverpool, Villa. So Villa could even knock on third. And I know that sounds...
Do you think the European issue might... Like, do you think they've got enough chutzpah to European and...
The European issue is why I'm not being confident about it.
So buoy them on. You never know. They've signed... Their off-season's been very good. Like, yeah. I felt like they've signed some really good players.
Their bench. I mean, like, Ross Barkley, unused substitutes.
So someone said they thought Ross Barkley was going to be a drop-away, like, disappointment. By the way, I'll actually save that news for in a minute. But Gundogan might be on his way to Chelsea as we record this. On his way to City as we record this. Chelsea will be mental. Liverpool, I'd take him. Genuinely.
Yeah, for sure. Although he doesn't, he's another one of those who kind of plays the McAllister role.
Yeah, but you could also say, do you want to do the six this week?
Yeah, you could. Just on Villa, like...
I'm just looking at their team.
They brought on Duran, and they brought on Matson.
I was looking at Villa subs. Yeah, Duran, they should get his brother.
I know. And play them up front together.
That would be great.
It would be good.
It was like when Darren Bent and Marcus Bent both played up front for Everton and they called them the two Bents.
And then you also have, like, you know, centre back. They got Pau Torres, they got Mings, they got Konsa.
Matty Cash. Yuri Tielemans seems like high value for them now.
Yeah, he was in that midfield. So you got Tielemans, you got McGinn.
Obviously. McGinn's got like a load of underlying value thing that goes on. Like there's always loads of questions where they go, who's the player in the league who has the most
impact, you know, for that their team at the beginning?
Second-hand recoveries, or like weird, there's like a weird stat, and everyone goes, "Oh, is it Carcedo?" And they go, "You'll never get it," and they never do.
They got Jacob Ramsey in there.
Jacob Ramsey, Duran. They bought Ian Matson, and then I've got to admit, there's a lot of players in there where obviously Buendia, Ross Barkley, Diego Carlos. Mings is still injured.
That's such a good side.
It's good. I'd say like it's going to take a bit of coaching.
But it's one of the best coach teams in the Premier League.
Yeah, they definitely were a bit unlucky last year to lose out in a couple of games because they're a bit more transitional for them last year, wasn't it? Like they didn't know whether they were in or out.
I mean, I think City, Arsenal and Villa are the three best coach teams in the league.
What about Liverpool? You think you
it's
just
too
think
new.
It's too
new
to be? Yeah, okay.
Too quick.
So they find themselves behind City. It stopped the league now, and Brighton win it. I think they had a better performance opening weekend than Manchester United did.
Yeah, Man United were interesting because Ten Hag did that Ten Hag thing of saying we're not ready. Ten Hag is like shouldn't be doing like weddings or bar mitzvahs anytime soon.
I agree.
And he was probably right that they weren't ready, but they got across the line, and
I agree about that.
To be confirmed.
What is it? I love Xerxes and it upsets me. I really love him. I think he's a really great player. And I think because he sort of resembles, as you and I said in conversation, who was the player you said?
Bobby.
Paul Pogba.
Oh.
And I said, I think he looks like Bobby Firmino. But I actually said in my notes, he looks like Bobby Firmino and Paul Pogba. I'll find that note.
I'd love him to be good, by the way.
Bobby Pogba. Bob Pogba.
By the way, while we're here, I miss Bobby Firmino.
I miss Bobby Firmino
emotionally
so much.
Yeah, from my life.
Like, such a, like, I was watching some of his goals back the other day. He's got some great goals. Like, that boot of his was really good. I was watching Mo Salah's opening. By the way, congratulations, Mo Salah. He scored the most ever opening day of the season goals. 9. You've now beaten Frank Lampard for that. So that's satisfying.
A lot of goals for Frank Lampard from the fields. For, eight. That's a lot.
Really pushed them over the line. One of them was when, and I think this is one of Firmino's favourite finishes, is doing that like piss-takey. You know that some people lob over the keeper and it's like, oh, you did that because that was your only option. Firmino sort of goes, whoop, and it like goes so high that it almost looks like it's not going to go in. And then, you know, either hangs it in a horrible place where Salah can head it in or it's in. I was like, I didn't realise you'd done that more than once.
And the no-look one against Arsenal. The no-look one
where it's basically he's hitting it and then he looks away. That's the best bit. And everyone goes, he did a no-look.
Oh, that I didn't know that was the order.
It's kind of like, imagine if he did do a no-look and miss. Like, there was a big conversation around that in our fan base at one point where it was like, oh, he'll do that and miss one week. He never did.
It's like, remember the Ash Splash in...
Yeah.
Dean Ashton. Someone Ashton in rugby. He used to cross the line.
Sam Ash?
No, not quite.
One of them, I can't remember.
But he used to...
Sam Ashton owns a studio that I know. Yeah, sorry.
Sam, now we're sounding kind of right. Anyway, he used to, rather than put the ball down,
right,
to grab it one-handed like this.
Dive.
Right. Arms spread. And then, and everyone was like...
One day that's going to fall out your hands.
One day that's going to fall out your hands.
Yeah. Did it?
I think so.
I don't watch enough rugby to know.
Yeah, well, neither really. I did. My rugby references are from 2011 or something.
Same with the football. big call for the season?
Villa top four.
Villa top four.
That's maybe not outrageous. Such a hot take, yeah.
If you want someone else said Villa to challenge for the title.
I could see
outrageous.
I could see Villa doing what they did last year, which is being top of Christmas, or they were, you know, they were somewhere, they were...
Right.
But I don't think with the European football... Here's a hot take that's sort of too hypothetical to be that hot. Villa with no European football would challenge for the title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can say yes, can't I?
What's yours?
It can't be a Liverpool-based one. I think Manchester United will beat Man City home and away.
I like that. And it's kind of on as well because they always do well against them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
At the Etihad.
I don't think that's that hot take, really, is it? I think Newcastle will challenge for the top four.
Yeah. So that's also lukewarm. What about... I haven't got a hot one yet. Ah, here's a
Brighton will challenge for the top four.
That's hot.
That's hot.
Or the other one you say is...
One that no one cares.
Ipswich stay up, bracket, comfortably. That's hot, wow. Yeah.
You think is Ipswich of all the teams that will stay up comfortably?
No, I think Ipswich will... You know, because I mentioned this on your live stream.
Knock away.
Their substitute striker played for Wimbledon, played for us last year.
Was the Scouse Iraqi?
Yeah, Ali.
Right.
And he's a huge deal for us and we love him. But like when I watched him in the championship last year, I did think, you know, this is going to be a step up to the Premier League. And I think that just shows the level difference. Their squad is a little bit behind.
So funnily enough, I was looking at the bottom of the table and for some reason I was like, they are in the bottom three at the moment. But then I looked up and I was like, there are a lot of teams on zero. Isn't that weird? Like there are, the Premier League is split exactly. So in the opening weekend, there was only one draw.
Who was that?
Forest and Bournemouth. And then the rest of the league was either wins or losses.
So it's symmetrical at the moment.
It's perfectly symmetrical.
Very cool.
Yeah. Like, that's a bit unusual.
Wait, hang on. Is it not always symmetrical by definition after the first game?
No, because there might be more draws, no? So
yeah, but even then...
Yeah, but what I mean is like, you could have a load more draws that would just then mean that more and more teams got 1 point, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but because they happened in the multiple of two.
That not push everyone else down? Could Leicester have not drawn with Bournemouth and then that would mean that Leicester could have drawn with Newcastle and then Leicester would also have a point and therefore...
Yeah, yeah, but you'd have eight teams that won, eight teams that lost and you'd have four draws in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't mind about the symmetricalness, but I'm saying it's perfectly symmetrical, 10 and 10.
Oh, as in...
There's 10 teams who've got points and 10 teams who don't have any points.
Oh, ignore
me. Yeah.
Ignore me. As per.
I hadn't made the point well. So you did argue against a point that was poorly made. Cool. Well, that was indeed the first of many podcasts back for Jamie and Lawrence. How did that feel?
Thank you for having me.
Well, I think it's more of like a joint venture thing.
No, it is, yeah.
So, yeah, thanks for having me. We bought some couches or some seats. Let us know what we should put in the background. Today we have... Not very much. That is a Batmobile and a Jordan ball. There are some trainers. I think in frame, the Kevin Garnett thing is there. If you want to send us something for the background, Jamie was wearing a Liverpool jacket today. He's got that cold in the office. So if anyone wants to send Jamie just some generic training kit, what team would you like? It won't happen. So just say anyone.
I'd quite like
someone continental.
I'd quite like Real Sociedad.
Why did you have to mention the one team that are currently a bit of an issue for me? Anyway.
By the way, if we're doing this, you should show off your shoes because I want them.
Oh, these?
Yeah.
Yeah, these are my one big expense every year. I buy them once. I met someone the other day who had the same pair of trainers for 4 years. I thought that was a little bit weird. The same pair.
Yeah, that's
these are Comme des Garçons Converse.
They're really cool. Yeah.
Thanks. And a lot of people, someone said to me that I look a bit gay when I wear them. So
yeah, well, that generally means you're doing something right, I think, when it comes to fashion.
Looking at, yeah, look right. Yeah, good point. Anyway, this has been great. Thanks for joining us. Let us know whether you listen to this or watch this on YouTube. Hopefully that was a stimulating conversation, even if you don't support Chelsea. And let us know what your hot take of the start of the season is, because, we'd love to have more of those. Yeah, let us know in the Patreon. And of course, I think I might start channel membership soon, just because there's so many supportive people out there. Chat you in a little while. Much love. Bye-bye.